Hey, hey, and welcome to Stopping By. I'm Doug Pierce, Senior Vice President and Financial Advisor with Pinnacle Wealth Partners at UBS Financial.
And I'm Jess DeBeer, Associate Director and Senior Wealth Strategy Associate, also with Pinnacle Wealth Partners. We are located in Mount Laurel, New Jersey, and can be reached at pwp@ubs.com.
Our team's mission, our just cause, is to bring financial literacy and competency to the masses. We've been fortunate to meet interesting people along the way. They have compelling life stories about overcoming adversity and seeking their passions. Hopefully, you'll see that our guests are just like you. So Jess, who's stopping by today?
Doug, would you agree we've had some pretty cool guests here on the Stopping By?
I would agree.
Okay, we've had cool guests. I would argue that our guest today may be the coolest ever. Of our guests, nothing against the other guests. But today, we are chatting with David Rutherford, former Navy SEAL and CIA training instructor. He is also the founder of the Frog Logic Institute. He is not affiliated with UBS Financial Services Incorporated, and his views are his own.
Finally, a guest that can match my rugged masculinity, Jess.
I was thinking the exact same thing. How did you know?
Let's meet you, Stopping By. Jessica DeBeer. Jess, I had to get my lemon water today for my voice. I need the lemon water.
Yeah, we got to protect those quartz, man.
Problem is, it's like straight out of the tea kettle. It's flaming hot.
Oh, put an ice cube in it. Didn't your mama ever do that?
No, get out of here. I'm a man. First of all, we're talking like a really tough guy, and I don't think people see me and they're like, this is a rough and humble guy.
Yes, they do. Sure they do, Doug. You betcha. Can I say something? I'm going to say something that I maybe shouldn't say, but I'm going to say it. I know you love these. I am still not sure about this because my whole life, I thought the SEALs operated in water. Like something needs to happen in the water and it's scary and it's like dangerous and it's national security issue. If it's in the water, that's when you bring in your SEAL. Why? Because SEALs, the animal, are in the water. So like when we're talking about like Operation Kill Osama bin Laden and SEALs were involved, that definitely was not in the water. That was out of the water. So then I was confused. So what is your understanding?
Okay, I can help you here.
Okay.
SEALs. Sea, air, and land. It's an acronym. It's not a full acronym. I know, because the E, it's sea,
it's
air,
confusing because
and land.
A seal is a water animal. Mammal.
But they go on land to breed. They go on land.
Fair. That's fair.
Press. I mean, they are amphibious.
That is an excellent word. They are amphibious.
Look at us. We're like professional broadcasters, Jess.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, so excited. Today's guest is someone whose passion, energy, and commitment to helping others is just remarkable. We are speaking with David Rutherford today, who is a former Navy SEAL, motivational speaker, behavioral training specialist, and the founder of the Frog Logic Institute. After serving with distinction in the SEAL teams, David continued his service as an international training instructor for the CIA, applying his elite skills in high-stakes environments around the world. He then went on to create the Frog Logic Institute, a powerful personal and professional development program that combines Navy SEAL principles, positive psychology, and his own life lessons to help individuals and teams embrace fear, build trust, and achieve mission success. His message has resonated with millions, from Fortune 500 companies and pro sports teams to first responders and students. He is also a best-selling author, host of the David Rutherford Show podcast. Y'all tune in. I'm sure you already are tuning in. And a passionate advocate for mental resilience, using every platform he has to help people face adversity and live with purpose. David Rutherford, it is an absolute honor to welcome you to our podcast today. Thanks for stopping by.
Thank you so much for having me. That was a very humbling introduction. I appreciate that.
I am delighted to have you on. I come from a military family. My grandfather was a major general in the Korean War. My father was in Army Reserves. My sister was in Army Reserves.
Wow.
And my Uncle Bob was an original frogman in the 50s.
Wow, he was a my frog goodness.
Man. So I grew up hearing about the frogman, and he was the coolest cat on the planet. He, this man, like, became a firefighter just because he built his own house from the ground with his own two hands, just because he felt like it. Like, this is the kind of person that I grew up just idolizing him. So it's a big deal to have you on the show for me today.
Wow. Thanks to your family too. And all the women and men that supported those endeavors. My God, I mean, right. I bet Veterans Day and Memorial Day are pretty intense around indeed, your family for indeed. Sure.
So let's get into it. We always love to hear about kind of where you got started, where you're from to before you found this world. Where are you originally from, David?
I'm from Boca Raton, Florida, born and raised. My parents were originally from Michigan, and my dad got an offer from an LA firm and a Miami firm. And so my mom was like, we're going to South Florida. So we ended up in South Florida, in sleepy South Florida in the 1970s. Yeah.
Not typically. The pipeline is usually, you know, Long Island to Boca. It's not Michigan.
Well,
so you had some Midwest DNA. You're in Florida, and then you kind of moved up, right? You went to college at Penn State?
I did. I did a fifth year high school up at a prep school in Connecticut. And then from there, got recruited to play lacrosse at Penn State.
Got recruited to play lacrosse?
Yeah.
Interesting. All right. And were they a powerhouse then? Were they?
No.
Oh, no.
No. Penn State during those days in the early 90s, we were a good team. I mean, we were top 15 to 25 team, kind of cracking into that other code of the Johns Hopkins, the Marylands, the Towsons, the North Carolinas, and then obviously all of the Ivy League schools were just dominant through those era. And then, but it was really when Jeff Tamboni, who used to coach at Cornell, when we got him, he really changed the program around. And then I started working with the program as a kind of a motivational coach in 2019. And then, you know, being able to come back and participate in some small way with this incredible program that's emerging has really just been amazing for me.
And since you went to Penn State, does this mean you're an Eagles fan?
You know what? I hate to say that to you, but I grew up kind of in a bizarre way. I was a Steelers fan.
Oh, yeah. We won't hold it
against
no,
that's
you.
Fine.
I know.
If you told us the Cowboys or something, I might have, you know, we might have lost.
Yeah, never.
We might have lost that.
No, never. And now that Saquon is killing it there, I'm definitely a leaning Eagles fan for sure.
We'll get into bleed green by the end of the podcast.
Yeah, that's fine.
That's what we'll do.
And so at Penn State, that was, from what I understand, that's sort of where you got introduced to the Navy SEALs. It's kind of interesting to me that your background was, you know, your dad was an attorney. You would think the Navy SEALs wouldn't be the next logical step. So how did that all come about?
It wasn't. In fact, you know, my whole dream was to play football in college. And I had generated an illusion because I had a D1 arm, but that was it. So just recognizing that I wasn't in Kansas anymore, you know, was a pretty heavy reality. And so I kind of quit on that dream and never really recovered from that sense of failure. I had started lacrosse late as a freshman in high school, and it was in Florida, and Florida lacrosse back then was not anything like it is today. I was so far behind. You know, my roommate was an All-American from Baltimore. My other freshman buddy was on the under-19 All-World team, and so the hurdle was so huge that I just wasn't able to close that gap, and then lost a lot of faith in myself. And really, that was the beginning of really some pretty significant struggles emotionally, mentally. And I'd known a lot about the military growing up, but I never heard of a Navy SEAL until my freshman year. A guy who lived next door to us was Tony Gronsky from Scranton, PA. Tony had given me this book when we were freshmen about SEALs in Vietnam. And I read that thing cover to cover, and I was just blown away by the stories and what these guys were doing and how they did it, the training. And I was just like, wow, that's really cool. And then put it away. And during that time, I wasn't sure what I was going to do. I was actually an art major with a minor in poetry in school. And
what?
I love that.
That must come in handy on Valentine's Day.
I didn't know what I was going to do. And then after this kind of psychological collapse, I had this, my first big God moment in my life. I just kind of was like, all right, I got to change my life. And as a good lawyer's kid, I wrote down all the pros and cons of what I could do and where I could go and all this stuff. And none of it made sense. And kind of this book kind of popped into the forefront of my consciousness. And I was like, you know what? That's what I need. I need an incredibly difficult program that's built around teamwork, that's going to test myself, and that I'll have the opportunity to achieve something that's bigger than myself. It just made sense. I don't know why it made sense, but it made sense to just drop out and enlist in the Navy and pursue the dream of becoming a Navy SEAL.
I feel like so many young people are where you were. So many young people have struggles with pressures from parents or pressures from their school system or pressures from what their other friends are doing. And it can be tremendous, especially when your brain isn't fully formed, right? You're still trying to figure all of this out. And so to have a story from a David Rutherford to say, this is where I was. I found this inspiration from something, wherever it came and I followed it. And look at you, right? So it's like, I really think it speaks to a lot of those young kids who are just, what am I supposed to be doing? And I have all of this stuff I'm supposed to be doing. So I think that's great. Can you take us to the moment where you dropped out, you go to the SEALs? Was there ever a, what did I do? What have I done? Moment?
Thankfully, there was like four books from Vietnam and there was the Charlie Sheen Navy SEAL movie. And so there was not a lot of information about how hard it was, thank God. Because if I had gotten access to that, I probably never would have followed through with it. I showed up at Bud's Sunday after Thanksgiving of 95. So I dropped out in May 95. And by November, I showed up out in Coronado for training. And I remember I checked on board with a young guy who was still 18 and we had gone through boot camp together. And we checked on board on a Sunday. And when we checked in on a Sunday night, and the chief, the SEAL who was on duty that night, got woken up and came out and just hammered us and just beat the snot out of us. Like a couple hundred push-ups made us get, you know, just because we woke him up.
We have to define for our listeners, we have to define BUDS. We have to define what that is.
BUDS is Basic Underwater Demolition SEAL Training. It's a 7-month course. It's the introductory course in the long pipeline to becoming a SEAL. You go through 7 months of BUDS, then you do 49 weeks now of SEAL qualification training. Then after that 2 years, you get your Trident assigned to you, but you're not really a frogman yet. Then you get assigned to a SEAL team. And then when you show up at your team, you get into a platoon, which is of 20 men. And then you do a year and a half more of training before you even deploy. So it's somewhere around close to 4 years of training before you even go do the job. And so I first day there, we're taking a beat down. This guy's telling me, he's going to make it his personal job to get me to quit in the next 48 hours. And he's screaming at us. And I'm like scared to my core. And then every day, honestly, I every day it was a day that fear was incredibly present and palpable. It was just day after day, you're in this motivational war in your own mind.
Right.
Are you able to quit
if you wanted to?
It's a completely voluntary, and that's the famous aspect of it. It's called DOR, or drop on request. And if you quit at any time on the journey, you're forced to go into the courtyard and they have this bell hanging and you have to ring this bell 3 times, take off your training helmet and place it next to the bell. And you can imagine they just start stacking up because we have an 86% dropout rate.
Interesting.
And that's in training. And when you add in, you have to go through a probationary period before you even go in.
Yeah.
In boot camp, you have more tests. And then prior to going to San Diego, you have what's called BUDS prep, which is 3 months in Great Lakes, Illinois. Then you get a BUDS class date. You show up a pre-phase months, which tons of people quit. And then first phase, you lose the majority of people in first phase.
Did you ever feel like, I'm not going to ring that bell? I don't want to be one of those bell ringers? Or when you heard the bell, did you feel like envious? Do you hear do you hear bells in your dreams?
Yeah.
Or nightmares?
I imagine it.
Let me put it this way. My kids definitely know never to ring a bell three times. Let me put it that way. So
okay.
Yeah,
it stuck.
They get so diabolical that they actually take the bell like during Hell Week, and you know, you're up for, it starts on Sunday afternoon and you're up until Friday afternoon, and you only sleep about 4 hours of sleep the entire week. The first sleep you get is Thursday morning for about 2 hours. So you'll go 90 to 96 straight hours of getting crushed. And to give you an idea how much you're getting crushed, you might run 200 miles in that week alone because stop. You're burning about 6,000 to 9,000 calories a day. You've got these 300-pound rubber boats on your head all the time. Everywhere you're going, you have these boats on your head. You're immersed in freezing cold water for hours on end. And what they do is they have the truck. They have huge instructor staffs for just safety purposes and medical purposes that are always with the students.
Safety.
And
use safety with air quotes. I just want to know.
They'll have the bell on the back of one of the pickup trucks.
Oh, man.
And the instructors, well, the instructor will literally, you never want your day where it's good instructor, bad instructor, because these guys, they're trained to do this. One guy will be in your ear and he's like, you know, screaming at you, your push-ups stink, you're letting your teammates down, you know, you're weak, you're never going to make it. Just constant barrage of that. I call it the negative insurgency, right? And then you have this other instructor that'll come in as you're wallowing in your own fear and misery and feeling horrible for yourself. They'll be like, hey, listen, Rut, here's the deal, man. Don't worry about it. This job's not for everybody. It's not a big deal. And they will just go back and forth until guys quit. And you can imagine by the time you're legally drunk after 24 hours of no sleep, right?
Yeah.
And then by the time you reach 54 hours of no sleep, you start to have pretty profound cognitive disassociation. It's where, yeah, all regions of your brain, you're seeing things, you're hearing different things, you're almost in a trance like, and then by 74 hours, you're essentially a zombie, but your emotional state just gets flayed wide open and they just prey on it. And that's their job. Because what Hell Week is supposed to be is a simulation of combat, the intense psychological stressors that you'll be under in those cases. And so they try and manipulate that with every single fiber in their devious, sadistic bodies.
And is that to keep you in? Is it also like if you were in a situation and you were captured to help get you through it or get you out of it?
That's a great question. We actually go through a school called SEER, which is Search, Escape, Rescue, and Evasion. They put you in a mock prisoner of war camp. You go through all that. What they really want to do is get the people who can't hang to quit. BUDS is a weeding out process, a weeding out process that has been in place for about 80 years. But I knew if I quit that, I didn't think I would ever recover from that.
I don't think
I could have ever looked at myself in the face and had pride in who I was if I had quit. And that was the real driver in it.
I completely get it.
You do. You do, Jess? Yeah, I was going to say.
I hear
the words you're saying.
I do know. Well, everyone's been in that place and you push through.
And that's what over the last 30 years, I've come to realize that, you know, those, what you want to call them, never quit moments, or you call, you know, hitting rock bottom, or just on a general plane within the human condition of just not knowing who you are or where you want to go, it hits us all.
Doug, I'm going to skip ahead to a question. So I'm skipping ahead. I'm looking at this question, giving your background, evolution of naval special warfare. How do you think the mindset of training of today's SEALs compares to those frogmen, or does it?
Training is, in my mind, having spent, you know, the last 30 years of my life really trying to understand training. Training is the essence of all success. We make it real simple. We look at life as simplistically as possible. There are two kinds of people in the world as it relates to specific skill sets. There are those who are trained and those who are untrained. And those who are trained always have a distinct advantage over those who are not. So as I look back to those guys of the, you know, 1940s and then, you know, post-World War II, the unit almost collapsed. And then Korea happened. And this is when your uncle probably came in. Mm-hmm. They built it back up. And I know at that point, they really began to evolve their training. When Korea took place, it was like, okay, we want you guys to not only go do hydrographic reconnaissance of the shores and all this, but could you guys like go in and blow up these railroad lines? Could you
while
go
you're in there, blow while up, you're at it?
Could you, while you're at it, could you? And they were like, hell yeah, we can. The whole idea of is to build out your unit's capabilities to another level. And this was the perfect idea, and it could secure them and their opportunities. And they did that amazingly in Korea and really had some profound successes. And so the training began to adapt a lot more and a lot improved. And then by Vietnam, it was in 1961 that John F. Kennedy launched, officially commissioned the first two SEAL teams. And they just went out and built and engaged in every training profile that you could imagine. And then in the late 60s and 70s, then BUDS started to emerge.
Yeah.
And really, it was probably the late 90s where they really started bringing all different types of psychologists and training experts from all over out there, from Olympic training to everything you can think of, and really started to evolve. And even the training that I went through is nowhere near compared to what it is now. Training always evolves because combat evolves. Mm. If you don't keep up with those evolution, that evolution of training, then your force will take the hit downrange, yeah, and people will die as a result. We started adapting our training profiles to where now we have these tier one guys that have broken every single idea or limit that we thought was viable for human beings. They've shattered those.
Yeah. How do you come home after that and like go to Wegmans? You know, like, do you want to like parkour over the aisles? You know what I mean? To get that excitement. How do you shift from that to coming back to, you know, a typical American day?
Unfortunately, you don't. There's a term and it's called operator syndrome. And what that is it's a unique constellation of 17 different medical and mental health challenges that our operators, our soft guys, face as a result of long-term high-risk training exposure, mm, as well as combat deployments. It's both. Mm. And so what they have to deal with, and what's interesting is that most special operations guys do not suffer from post-traumatic stress disorder. The main psychological challenge they deal with is the sensation of hypervigilance and not being able to fulfill that hypervigilance, which then leads into profound questions of existential existence, intimacy issues, not being able to connect, not being able to feel connected to your life, your kids, your families. But the real challenges that guys are suffering from are in the medical aspect, which launch into and hyper-exaggerate those other mental health things. And that's number one is traumatic brain injury from blast wave exposure. What we have is called astrogeal scarring. And so the blast wave, as we're blowing, setting up a slap charge, a two-pound C4 slap charge on a door, and then standing 16 feet away, when that detonation goes, the blast wave rips through our skulls and then causes these astrogeal scars. Let's say you get a scar on a portion of your prefrontal cortex that affects metacognition or short-term memory or long-term memory, wherever it is in your brain. Yeah. Well, that's fried. It's permanent. The second one is the one that we're really finding is having the most dramatic effect is metabolic dysfunction or endocrine challenges. And because as soon as you go into training, your limbic dial, your limbic system is turned up to 10.
Yeah.
And so your everyday, like most people will have a pseudo traumatic experience a couple times a year, maybe you almost get run over on a car or whatever.
Right, right.
But we're going through 10 a day, every day for years. And so what they think is somewhere between 4 and 6 years, that regulatory compensation breaks. And so your amygdalas and your hippocampus don't know if you're in real fight or flight or not. And so they just start dumping stress hormones at whenever it wants, and in adrenaline, epinephrine, norepinephrine, and then the killer is cortisol. Your brain is just accumulating these huge amounts of cortisol, which then fries your thyroid, your hypothyroid, your adrenal glands. It destroys gut biomes and causes all different types of emotional and mental health challenges. And then the third one of those top three is orthopedic injuries. And so every day, guys are having to live with perpetual pain. And if you've ever had pain that is extenuating, you know, it can cause massive emotional reactivity. And then that leads into self-medicating, and whether it's through alcohol or drugs. And then, you know, if you go to the VA, they hand you a handful of pills.
Yeah.
So this whole thing, we've really been trying to spread the word on this. Yeah. To get, because there are ways to assist with the people that are suffering from these things. And, but it's very, very challenging. What we're trying to do, and we've got a little nonprofit called the Operation Center Foundation. What we're focused on are four main ideas. One is, first and foremost, metabolic stabilization. If we can get your blood work to where it's somewhere in where it needs to be, that's our first. Then we offer mental health treatment through an organization called the Soft Network. These guys are phenomenal. So we get people talking. And then the third one is neurogenic support. Try and kickstart their nervous system through stellate ganglion nerve blocks or hypermagnetic resonance treating in their brains or psychedelic treatments down in Mexico. And then the final one is orthopedic support to really give them access through an organization called My Medical Images. To the world's top orthopedics, so they can go find these guys, and if they need surgery, get surgeries from the best in the world. And it's an incredibly difficult thing. And then to reinforce the intensity of this, you know, since 9/11, we've lost, some estimates is over 325,000 people, veterans, to suicide. And now we're averaging about 6,000 suicides a year. And so there is an epidemic of suicide in the special operations community in particular. Our suicide growth has increased by like 4% every year since COVID in particular. And then the Afghan pullout was devastating for many guys too. Yeah. So it is the most difficult aspect of service is not being given a good enough solution.
Well, it's great that you're setting up these programs to kind of mitigate this, but it would be, I'm just saying this, it would be nice if they knew when they came back, there was some soft place to land that's maybe the government paid for. I don't know. I'm just having a moment, but yeah.
No, I trust me. I had that moment every day, in particular last Monday at Memorial Day. Yeah. It's the toughest day of the year. I think there's this group in. I 100% know that Pete Hegseth is absolutely dedicated to veterans. They are absolutely committed to addressing this. So I have some hope, but I'm not going to hold my breath.
Yeah.
First of all, this is fascinating, and I want to throw out all of our questions.
I know, it's like...
for you and stuff, you know. All right, so we're going to pivot to, I think, your life after service and how you kind of took what you learned here and move out to the world. But before, one last fun one I'm curious about. You know, you did some pretty impressive stuff. Do you miss blowing things up? It's like, when was the last time you blew something up, man?
Okay, folks, we're going to press pause right here just for now. We had so much fantastic material with Rhett. That's David Rutherford to y'all. I don't actually know if I'm on a Rhett level with him yet, but all kidding aside, this is the first time in Stopping by History that we've had to break an episode into two parts. That is how fantastic our conversation was with this guy. If you thought today's insights were powerful, just wait till you hear what's coming for part two, coming up soon.
This podcast is presented for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as investment advice or the basis for making any investment decisions. It does not constitute an offer to sell or a solicitation of an offer to buy any specific product or service. UBS does not provide legal or tax advice, and we would recommend listeners to obtain appropriate independent professional advice. Some of the views and opinions expressed may not be those of UBS Group AG or its its affiliates. UBS Financial Services, Inc. offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC-registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC-registered broker-dealer. These services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct business and that you carefully read the agreements and disclosures that we provide about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review client relationship summary provided at ubs.com/relationship summary. UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS Group AG and is a member of FINRA and SIPC.